A man stands in his backyard at midnight, planting seeds by flashlight in soil that won't sustain them. His house is paid off after decades of monthly checks, but he won't live to see that final payment cleared. He's convinced his death is worth $20,000, more than his life ever earned. This is Willie Loman, and his story cuts deeper today than when Arthur Miller first staged it in 1949. We live in an age of personal branding and LinkedIn profiles, where everyone is selling something, especially themselves. Willie's tragedy isn't that he failed, it's that he never questioned what success actually meant. Willie Loman is 63 and exhausted, not just physically, but existentially. He spent decades as a traveling salesman, driving hundreds of miles to make a sale, to be liked, to matter. But now his mind is fracturing. Past and present bleed together. One moment he's talking to his wife Linda in their Brooklyn home. The next, he's reliving conversations with his dead brother Ben, who represents everything Willie wanted to be. Rich, adventurous, ruthless. What makes Willie compelling isn't his failure. It's his desperate refusal to see it. His refrigerator is simultaneously the finest ever made and constantly breaking down. His son Biff is both lazy and full of untapped potential. These contradictions preserve dignity in a life that's slipping away. His philosophy is deceptively simple. Be liked and you will never want. Personality, charm, a firm handshake, these are what matter. Never mind that he's been demoted to commission-only work. He clings to the memory of Dave Singelman, an 84-year-old salesman who made sales by phone from his hotel room, whose funeral drew buyers from across the country. That's the dream, to be so well-liked that your death means something. Attention must finally be paid to such a person. Linda's fierce declaration isn't blind loyalty, it's a battle cry. She's discovered the rubber hose Willie has hidden in the basement, connected to the gas line. She knows what it means, yet she persists, choosing to stand by someone she loves, even as he unravels. Linda sees everything Willie can't acknowledge. She manages their precarious finances, knows exactly how much they owe and to whom. When Biff and Happy abandon Willie at a restaurant after a disastrous meeting, her rage is magnificent. Get out of here, both of you, and don't come back. This isn't a passive housewife. This is a woman who has carried her family through decades of instability. Yet Linda's strength can't save Willie from himself. She shares just enough of his delusions to enable them. Her final words at Willie's grave carry devastating irony. I made the last payment on the house today. Today, dear. And there'll be nobody home. They've achieved what they worked for, but it means nothing now. In a Boston hotel room, teenage Biff discovered his father with another woman. You fake, you phony little fake. Those words shattered everything. Until then, he'd been Willie's golden boy, star athlete, destined for greatness. After Boston, he failed math deliberately, lost his scholarship, and spent 15 years drifting between ranch jobs out west. Now 34, Biff loves outdoor work, but Willie has taught him that working with your hands is beneath a Loman. A man who can't handle tools is not a man, Willie says while building the stoop, yet he pushes both sons toward white-collar careers they're unsuited for. The contradiction never registers. The play's emotional center comes when Biff confronts reality. I'm a dime a dozen, and so are you. When he breaks down sobbing, Pup, I'm nothing. It's both admission and plea. But Willie hears only what he wants. That boy is going to be magnificent. He interprets the tears as proof of love, missing the desperate honesty entirely. Happy has become Willie 2.0, chasing women, exaggerating his title, perpetually dissatisfied. At the funeral, while Biff has gained clarity, he had the wrong dreams, Happy vows to prove Willie Loman did not die in vain. The cycle continues. We're sold a simple promise. Work hard, be likable, and success follows. Willie Loman believed this completely. When reality contradicted the promise, he couldn't adjust his thinking. He adjusted reality instead. The play unsettles because Willie isn't destroyed by external forces, but by values absorbed from his culture. The play presents competing visions of success. Brother Ben's jungle capitalism, walking into the jungle at 17, emerging at 21, rich. Charlie's steady business acumen. Bernard, the nerdy kid Willie mocked, now arguing cases before the Supreme Court. And Willie's version, being remembered, being liked, making an impression. What's devastating is how completely Willie has internalized society's definition of worth. When Charlie offers him a job, Willie refuses. Accepting help would mean acknowledging failure. Even the setting reinforces this. Willie's house was once surrounded by open space and trees. Now apartment buildings hem it in, blocking the sun. The American dream promised expansion. Willie got confinement. By the end, he's convinced his death, the $20,000 insurance payout, will give Biff the capital to succeed. He's transformed his suicide into a business transaction, the ultimate perversion of everything he believed. The play mirrors Willie's fractured mind, sliding between past and present without warning. One moment he's in his kitchen, the next reliving a conversation from 15 years ago. This innovative stagecraft reveals how we experience life under psychological pressure. We don't remember objectively. We reconstruct the past to serve present needs. Willie's memories aren't flashbacks, but curated fantasies where his son's high school years shine as he needs them to, not as they were. His brother Ben appears confident, successful, validating, exactly as Willie wishes. Adult Biff's accusations trigger Willie's memory of that devastating hotel room discovery, revealing how a single event echoes through decades. Designer Joe Mielziner's transparent walls allowed scenes to flow with the speed of thought. No blackouts, just fluid movement as memory and reality bleed together. This structure puts us inside Willie's disintegrating mind, making us feel the weight of regrets that won't stay buried. 75 years later, Death of a Salesman feels uncomfortably current. In our era of personal branding and hustle culture, we still measure worth by professional success and sacrifice authentic connection for the appearance of achievement. Miller's genius was insisting that ordinary lives deserve tragic dimensions. Willie isn't a king, he's a tired salesman whose dreams exceeded his abilities. Yet his struggle for significance remains profoundly human. The play offers no easy answers. Is Willie a victim of capitalism or his own delusions? Both. Miller shows us a man destroyed by forces larger than himself and by his stubborn refusal to see clearly. What haunts most is Biff's observation. There was more of him in that front stoop than in all the sales he ever made. Willie's real talent was working with his hands, carpentry, gardening, building. But he abandoned what he loved, chasing his brother's wealth and Dave Singelman's popularity. His tragedy isn't that he failed to achieve his dreams, but that he never questioned whether they were worth achieving. Attention must be paid, not to the dreams we're sold, but to the lives we actually live, the people who actually love us, and the work that actually sustains us. The real tragedy isn't dying unknown. It's living a life that was never truly yours.